Good afternoon. Welcome to the Democracy Forum. This is the sixth program in our series this year to broadcast at this time on the third Friday of each month. We're featuring topics in Maine's participatory democracy, encouraging citizens to take an active role in government and politics. This program is a project of the League of Women Voters Down East, produced in cooperation with WERU-FM. Our conversation today is titled, Order in the Court. Who's your judge? We're going to talk about the Maine judiciary. How are judges chosen in Maine? How does Maine's judicial selection process compare to the federal system and to other states? What standards of judicial ethics apply in Maine? Are judges in Maine subject to undue influence by special, narrow, or partisan interests? Are judges in Maine facing escalating threats the way they are in some other states? What insulates Maine and how fragile are our protections? This show is pre-recorded on June 17th. Send your comments to news@weru.org. Please put Democracy Forum in the subject line. This is Ann Luther from the League of Women Voters of Maine. I'll be your host for the Democracy Forum. Let me introduce our guests. Lee Softley is the president and dean of the University of Maine Law School and former chief justice of the Maine Supreme Judicial Court. Welcome, Lee.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
So glad you could come. David Sacker is the director of judicial ethics at the National Center for State Courts. Welcome, David.
Thank you very much. I'm pleased to be here.
And Dimitri Bam is vice dean and provost at a professor of law at the University of Maine School of Law. Welcome back, Dimitri.
Yeah, thanks, Anne. Good to be back.
So let's get started. Lee, if you don't mind, I'll put it to you first. How are the courts structured in Maine?
If you go through the number of courts that are actually in the state of Maine, there are state courts, which include the probate courts that are somewhat separate, but are part of the state court system. Then there is the federal court system, which many people know much more about. And then in Maine, we have a tribal court system. Both the Passamaquoddy and the Penobscots have tribal systems that are collaborative and cooperative with the Maine state court system.
And talk about the state court system.
Sure. The state court system itself consists of basically four different units. There are magistrates who work with the district courts themselves, the Superior Court, and then the Supreme Judicial Court is the appellate court for the state of Maine. The district court and the Superior Courts have, through the years, had very different responsibilities. Over time, some of those responsibilities have blended. For example, the district and Superior Courts both handle the business court, which is a sort of specialty court for matters involving businesses and a variety of other related business-like matters. And both the district and the superior courts handle criminal matters, including criminal jury trials. But most civil jury trials are handled in the superior court. And the district courts, one of the district courts' primary assignments is family law, domestic violence law, the kinds of cases that affect people very personally.
So what kind of business do the magistrates do then?
Thank you. The magistrates are, they work with the district courts and they are assigned to helping families resolve matters as soon as possible when divorces are occurring or parents are splitting up. Their primary job is to make sure that child support is in place soon after a family begins to dissolve so that the children are well cared for. But they also do a number of things that help families find resolution early in a dispute period. The earlier a family can find ways to problem solve together, the better it works for everyone. Magistrates in the state of Maine do some extraordinary work helping families find solutions to problems that they originally thought were unsolvable. And then the district court is there if the matters remain in dispute and a trial needs to be held.
Oh, I got so many questions. I didn't know any of this. Okay. So I have a traffic violation. Where do I go?
You go to wherever it says on your traffic ticket. Now, in many instances, you can take care of your ticket without ever going to court, depending on how serious the charge is. And if you have to go to court, you're going to go to the district court. And if what you want to do is challenge the officer's determination that you rolled through that stop sign, you will go to the district court and you'll have a trial in the district court where the officer will testify and you will testify. And the judge will determine who is presenting the truth of the matter. Many traffic tickets are resolved by those of us who have received them, recognizing that we might have been going 5 or 10 miles over the speed limit.
You just pay. Tell about the probate court then. What do they do?
The probate court is sort of a different creature when it comes to courts. In the state of Maine, the probate court was established early on by the Constitution as a court in which the judges and the registrars of the court are elected. And they're elected, I think it's every 4 years. And the probate judges are responsible for resolving any disputes around wills, trusts, estates, now guardianships. So they were set up specially to handle those kind of end-of-life dispute resolution, family disputes around whether this is the correct will or someone else has the correct will. And many of the probate actions, so a matter is probated, it's both a noun and a verb. Many of the matters that are probated are actually not contested, but have to go through a specific procedure to make sure that the property is appropriately reallocated and that there is a record of everything that gets done after someone has died and left any kind of property.
So we're the League of Women Voters. We're involved with voting law and all that sort of thing. Let's say we have a challenge to voting law or something like that. Where would that go?
Challenge to a voting law would typically go to the trial court. It might actually go to the federal court.
Okay, wait, you said the trial court. Now, which one is that again?
So that would be typically it would go to the superior court.
Okay.
In the state court system. And this is why, and I'm happy to say this, you need a lawyer. lawyers are very helpful. You have to determine what is the dispute? Where does it come from? Which kind of votes does it affect? So it may actually be something that you would file in the federal district court that's here in Maine. Depends entirely on the facts of your case.
It's a violation of federal law versus a violation of state law or something like that.
That's usually what divides them.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yep. So, and how are all these judges chosen? Maybe this, I'll throw this one to Dimitri.
Well, you know, Lee mentioned one thing that's unusual with the probate courts. Those are the only judges that are elected in Maine. I suspect we'll talk about this some more in the coming hour, but that's not unusual throughout the country. It is unusual in New England and certainly Maine. The rest of the judges are generally appointed, right? So kind of mirroring the federal process, there's a different appointment process. Lee can speak more to the way the appointments works. But for example, the Supreme Judicial Court, judges are appointed by the governor. They're reappointed every 7 years.
Oh, I didn't know that. Reappointed every 7 years. Okay.
Yeah, so they serve terms. So that's, at least in that way, it's the most akin to the federal system, where you have the president appoint federal judges.
And the probate judges, you said, were elected for 4-year terms, right?
Yes, right. in public elections. So I'll go back a little bit to the appointment of judges in the state court system, district superior and the Supreme Judicial Court. The method of appointment of the judges is absolutely identical. Does not matter whether you're being nominated to the district court, to the superior court, or to the appellate court. And generally what happens is the governor puts a committee together that the governor trusts. That committee will look at a number of people, some of whom have applied to be a judge. The application is right online in case anybody is thinking about this, but some of whom have been recommended by people who have been around lawyers for a long time. The committee will go through all of their background and determine that they want to interview several of them. And then they will present the governor, usually with two or three names. Here are the people we think would be best for the position at this time. The governor then selects, most of the time, from those proposals, but the governor is not limited to that. Once the governor has selected a person to nominate, that nomination goes to the legislature and it starts the time clocks for all of the things that must occur from there. And the person who has been nominated will go through a committee hearing with the State Committee on the Judiciary, and they can ask any questions in the world. They look at the background.
That's a legislative committee, right? That's a committee of the legislature.
Correct. That's a committee of Maine's legislature. If the committee then approves the nomination, then it goes to the Senate. And it takes a larger vote of the Senate to not approve that person. Once the Senate has done its job, which results in approving, then the person becomes a judge. And life changes a lot.
You say from the voice of experience.
It does. When judges in Maine, we'll get a chance, I hope, to talk about this a little bit more. But judges in Maine are really scrupulous about making sure that they are not engaged in anything in their personal and private lives that can get tangled up with whatever is coming into the court. So one of the things that is a truism about being a judge in the state courts in Maine is that those lawyers who have been your friends, sometimes your social life, sometimes active with you now on social media, that's over. All of those connected relationships stop. And you, if you are like me, you have a conversation with your children about the fact that anything they do may well become anything they do that is inappropriate may become public. They are not likely to get any of the breaks that might come to others because we are really, really careful about judges in Maine.
And possibly you're having that conversation with your spouse as well. Hmm?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I am curious about this judicial nominating committee. And Dimitri, I don't know if you want to answer this or if Lee should keep on. Each governor doesn't like reappoint that whole committee de novo each time, right? Like you're on it and you stay on it and then somebody leaves and somebody comes on, or how does that work? Because I looked at the list of names and it's definitely a bipartisan committee right now. How does that work?
Dimitri, you want to take this or you want me to take it?
You know it best, Lee.
So the committee, if you look at the committee, it is almost always very bipartisan. And there are a number of really wonderfully thoughtful lawyers who are on the committee who will simply be invited by the next governor to stay on the committee. But none of that is required. This is governor's option. And what has happened in Maine, and we've been really fortunate, is that the governors are very also neutral in who they're appointing. They are not looking for a particular political party or political bent. They're looking for someone who will be a thoughtful and appropriate judge. So they often, you will see if you go back through time, a number of people have stayed on the committee, and then you get new folks who come on over time and they will stay for a while. But it has been a pretty consistent group of people over a period of time.
I want to take a station break right now and come back to this judicial nominating committee. You're tuned to the Democracy Forum on WERU-FM. This is Ann Luther from the League of Women Voters of Maine. Our topic today is order in the court. Who's your judge? Our guests this afternoon are David Sacker, Director of Judicial Ethics at the National Center for State Courts, Dimitri Bam, Vice Dean and Provost and Professor of Law at the University of Maine School of Law, and Lee Softly, President and Dean of the University of Maine School of Law and former Chief Justice of the Maine Supreme Judicial Court. This program was pre-recorded on June 17th. No listener calls are being taken right now. We've been talking about how nominations for the state court systems by the governor are made often from recommendations of the Judicial Nominating Committee. And we've been talking about how that committee works, who gets to be on it. And I guess we're talking about norms, right? Like, this is not a law. This is a norm that has been respected by governors of both parties for quite a long time, right?
I think that's a very good way to put it. It is something that all governors have kept in place. All governors have appreciated the work that has been done before, and often will ask those folks who are on the last governor's committee to stay on. Sometimes the governor may be looking for something in particular, rural practice, issues having to do with the issues of the day, domestic violence, those kinds of things. So the governor will add other people who've got expertise in those areas to look for the kind of person, not necessarily the experience, but the kind of person that they know this governor is looking for to deal with those issues.
This gives me a little bit of the weebie-jeebies, because we've seen norms broken, right? We've seen certain politicians have disregarded very long-standing norms, and it makes me think this is more fragile than it might appear. Would anybody like to comment on that? Go ahead, Lee, if you want to. But
I was on the bench for 30 years, and I saw many judges come and go. I saw the ends of wonderful careers as people hit their 70s and older, and I saw brand new judges. Every governor I worked with, so I was appointed by four separate governors during that 30-year period, one Republican, one Democrat, one independent, and then another Republican. All of the governors really cared about finding judges who would apply the Constitution and the law in an independent fashion. And, you know, you get people concerned about it. And I hear in your voice some concern. And yet what I saw was a group of governors over time, over issues, all looking to make sure that the bench was populated by people who were smart and patient and caring and neutral. And that worked pretty well most of the time. The good news for Maine is that the governor's nomination is only the actual beginning of the process. The next step is a very careful review by the legislature's committee on the judiciary, and then the Senate itself can be very much involved. So it's a multi-part process. Maybe that's why most of the judges appointed in Maine have been really good people.
Mm. Now, do they have to be lawyers? Do you have to be a lawyer to be a judge?
You know, that's a fascinating question. You have to be a lawyer to be a district or superior court judge. But to be a Supreme Judicial Court justice, you just need to be learned in the law. Now, all of the justices have been lawyers for decades now, but it's a different phrase that's used.
And what about probate judges? Do they have to be lawyers?
You know what? I'm looking at the constitutional piece.
David, do you know?
But I do know that the language that Chief Softly said is in very many of our constitutional state and territory. The provision for learned in the law is in a lot of state constitutions. Some states have interpreted that to mean a lawyer. Others have allowed folks who can prove through their background that they're learned in the law. And so Maine has a unique system, just like all 54 other jurisdictions. So it doesn't surprise me that it gets a little confusing when you start talking about how each kind of judge is selected. And I really like that, because I think it shows the individual nature of our states. I had the pleasure of speaking in Maine in October with the Judicial Council there in Western Maine. And you have a very collegial, professional, intelligent bench. You work together a lot. And everything that that's been said so far, I really agree with. You've got a really good way of selecting your judges. Also, you do have some elections as well, which brings in different rules of judicial conduct. But I think it's interesting that even a panel like this it has to kind of look things up to make sure we understand how all of them are selected.
I was wondering about the probate judges, whether they had to be lawyers. And I think we're uncertain about that. Yeah, okay. We're not sure.
A lot of states have not judges, and that can be an issue at times as well.
Did you say elected judges? That's a topic of conversation. My home state of Wisconsin elects judges. And compared to appointed judges, elected judges also have a lot of, let's say, issues in terms of how they're selected, and the money being not the least of it. Dimitri, would you like to comment a little bit or contrast between states that have appointed judges and elected judges?
Yeah, sure. And even within those categories, there are a lot of distinctions, right? So states that have elections, sometimes they have an outright election for the seat. Sometimes there's an appointment, and then the judges run for an up-down retention election. Even in an election, some of them are partisan, some of them are nonpartisan. So kind of the early states, you know, in the early 19th century, the states that came to the Union came in with partisan elections. Late in the 19th century, there was kind of progressive movement to try to move away from partisan elections. So many of the states that came to the Union in the late 1800s came with nonpartisan elections. So there's a lot of different kinds of elections, and they all raise their own issues. You know, to the extent that Lee focused on independence and impartiality, different kinds of elections, different kinds of ethics rules, they can raise different concerns for state judiciaries.
What do you mean by that? Different kinds of ethics rules can raise different questions.
Yeah, so, you know, so many states that came with elections have tried to regulate the way judges campaign for office. And in fact, some cases have reached the U.S. Supreme Court, right? So while these may be elections, sometimes there are rules about what judges can say, what judges can campaign on, are a little bit different. So, for example, some states prohibited judges from announcing their views on certain controversial issues that they might face. The U.S. Supreme Court said that some of those prohibitions are unconstitutional. They violate the judges as candidates' First Amendment rights. So they are allowed to at least announce their views, but they might not be able to pledge or commit to a viewpoint. Some states regulate to the extent that they can communicate with donors or contributors in elections. The U.S. Supreme Court has upheld some of those rules. So there are regulations about kind of how you can interact with prospective litigants that might be donating to your campaign, might be helping you get elected for office. And then you might face a case involving one of those litigants. And of course, a famous case from about 15 years ago is the Caperton case, where you had a justice for the West Virginia Supreme Court who received major support from one of the parties in a case that was pending at that time in front of the West Virginia Supreme Court. And the question in that case was, does the judge have to recuse himself in that case when there's an interest involving one of the contributors or one of the spenders on the judge's campaign? So those kinds of ethics issues that implicate independence and impartiality sometimes don't necessarily exist as much in an appointed judiciary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And can appointed judges be removed before their term is up? I mean, I guess, Lee, the way you were describing it, they're appointed for 7-year terms, and then, like, if they don't have to be reappointed necessarily, but can they be removed in between if they're just not doing a good job?
So the answer is yes, they can be removed in between, but there are two different procedures that would occur. So the Constitution would allow a judge to be removed by impeachment or by address of both branches of the legislature to the executive. In the entire time that I served as a judge, I never saw either of those procedures used. On the other hand, Maine has a judicial code of conduct, and there is an organization that oversees that. So judges can actually find themselves in a trial to demonstrate that what they did was not unethical when it has appeared to be unethical. And that committee has the capacity to remove the judge from current responsibilities. The other thing that comes up, wait.
How is that different from impeachment then?
Because impeachment has not been used. I can't tell you how it's different. This committee is a committee that's actually nominated. The folks are on it for X number of years, and they do the job that's required whenever a complaint is filed against a judge. If there were an impeachment, I anticipate that it would be much more at the legislative level. Mm-hmm. So this is a committee that oversees the code of conduct, and it can discipline a judge who has been determined to have violated the code of conduct. The other thing that I think probably the public is unaware of is that the Chief Justice has the authority to assign judges. So judges in Maine, as you know, have to sit everywhere. There's always a scramble as to who's going to sit furthest from their home, who's going to sit longest in particular areas. But if a judge is impaired in some way, either misbehaving or more often aging out of office.
I hadn't thought of that.
So, when you think about people come to these jobs, they're committed to them. They stay for a long time. There are occasional issues that are medical or human issues. The Chief Justice has the authority to say this judge will not sit any longer, or this judge will only handle these non-complex matters, or any of those kinds of approaches. So the Chief Justice can address a judge who has some issues. The Committee on Judicial Conduct can address a judge who's done something serious, sufficiently serious that a complaint has been filed, or under the Constitution, impeachment or address is available. It has just simply not been used in Maine that I'm aware of.
Does anybody know what happened to the probate judge? And I don't know if we're talking about the same system applying to probate judges as to the other judges, but you know, we had a probate judge here that got in a little difficulty last year, and I wondered if there was disciplinary action taken against him or whether you know.
The process worked.
Yeah.
I won't say anything further than that.
Okay. But the process came to bear in that case. Yeah. So can citizens log complaints? Like if they think they've been mistreated or if they think the judge was inept or incapable or didn't know the law, how could a citizen get redress under this system?
A person who believes that a judge has done something unethical can file a complaint with that Committee on the Judicial Code. There's actually a place on the court's website where you can go to find the form that will walk you through how to file that complaint. It's important, though, to make sure not to intertwine what people think of as mistakes of law with unethical conduct, because the appellate courts are there to handle those occasions when the one party will say, I just think the judge got that wrong. That's not how the law should have been applied. That's not an ethical complaint. That's an appeal. And that appeal allows you to say to the appellate court, we think the judge got it wrong, and the appellate court will then look it over and make determinations as to whether the judge was right or wrong. Those are not ethical considerations. So when the public is trying to figure out where do I go with this kind of complaint, it's important to understand the difference between the two. But if the public or the party believes that the trial judge was having ex parte communications with someone inappropriate or was
had a financial interest or something like
exactly
that.
Exactly.
Right.
Those kinds of things. That is a complaint, and you can go right online and find the form.
Interesting. So, I mean, you describe a process here that seems like it's pretty well calibrated to keep us from getting judges who are deeply biased or who are highly unqualified, right? Or who are corrupt or inept. It almost seems too good to be true against the backdrop of what we may be seeing at the federal level and elsewhere.
I am not an impartial observer. So I have to concede from the very beginning that I think that the way judges are selected in Maine and the way that the conduct committee works in Maine and the way the trial court chiefs oversee what's happening, all of those are checks on problems that might otherwise occur. But I will say there is no system designed by mankind that is perfect in every instance. And we do our best. And I think the state of Maine has done pretty well with those kinds of issues, particularly on the seven-year mark. A judge has to go through the whole process again. So there is a, if the governor is not interested in having the judge sit again, there's no recourse. That's it.
It's over.
That's it. Yep. But the governor, if the governor nominates, then you go back to the committee. The committee has an opportunity to say, were you working hard? Were you ethical? Were you,
right?
Why did you do these things? So, and of course, I always thought that my colleagues in New Hampshire had the best approach. They're appointed for life.
Oh.
And every 7 years, I said, I'm not so sure about this system, but I really do think it works very well.
Yeah.
David has an overview of that and may have a comment on that one.
Let me just sneak a station break in here. You're tuned to the Democracy Forum on WERU-FM. This is Ann Luther from the League of Women Voters of Maine. Our guests this afternoon are Dimitri Bam, Vice Dean, Provost, and Professor of Law at the University of Maine School of Law, Lee Softley, President and Dean of the University of Maine School of Law, former Chief Justice of the Maine Supreme Judicial Court, and David Sacker, Director of Judicial Ethics at the National Center for State Courts. Our topic today is order in the court. Who's your judge? This show was pre-recorded. Send your comments or questions to news@weru.org. Please put Democracy Forum in the subject line. David, we've been extolling the virtues of the Maine selection and appointment process here in Maine and the way that ethics and other issues can be resolved. Just give us a little bit of a background, like how does that fit into the national picture? Is this a pretty good system or what do you think comparatively?
Well, it is. And my comments about the Maine judiciary and the quality of the judges that I've met and I've known is not just a random act. People are people. And so I know Mainers are great folks, but you didn't get a great judiciary without having great mechanisms in place. And I think that your selection is excellent. And yes, as Professor Bam talked about, judicial elections became a big deal in the late 1800s in the South. Some of that was in response to Reconstruction. It's caused some issues. It's really difficult to regulate, but it's still a valid way to pick judges. I think what Maine does is really try to take a lot of the politics out. And quite frankly, there's probably no more existential danger to the judiciary than partisan politics. We don't want to have a red, blue, green, or purple bench. We want judges that make decisions based on the facts and the law. And I think you've got a system in place that's very, very good, but also very normal based on the national way that it goes. Your code of conduct is based on the model code from the American Bar Association. It's easy for me to use examples like when I spoke in Maine because your rules are the same. And so I could say, oh, well, in another state, we have a case where this happened and here's where a judge might get in trouble. So I think that those are all really good things about the way Maine selects and regulates. You know, yes, we can go back and forth on should they be lifetime or in good behavior, as we say under the federal system, or 14-year, 10-year, whatever. Yes, we don't want the independent judicial decision-making role to get interfered with. And so the more times you have, just an election you might have judges that suffer because of an unpopular opinion that was correct, that was exactly on point in protecting our fundamental rights or the rule of law. So you don't want to have too many times where, you know, a judge could be kind of seen as unpopular when they did the right thing. So I think Maine has done a very good job in selecting a system that works. And I agree, you know, some of it comes from the culture in Maine. And I think your bipartisan efforts are really good. I also think one thing I really thought was really good in Maine is that the justices of the Supreme Judicial Court justices are still stay involved. And they're often asked to help on cases after they've retired. They come to the meetings. I met several of them. And I think that's important that we hand down institutional knowledge. And of course, now you have a dean at your law school who is a former chief justice. And I think that's very, very good as well.
Do you want to comment, Dimitri, putting Maine in the national context in terms of judicial selection and methods of choosing?
You know, I guess I'm a somewhat of a contrarian, so I'll add maybe a different perspective on elections as well. You know, one of the reasons elections kind of came into place was to ensure more independent judges. There was a big concern in the 1820s and really could pass that as well, that judges were becoming too closely tied to state legislatures, to the state governors, that their decisions were really weren't reflecting the will of the people, but reflecting popular elites. And so the purpose of elections is somewhat ironic today, because we think of judges who are elected as less independent, but it was to make them more independent of those interests and more tied to the people, right? More tied to the electorate. And so I think that's the big question in this debate about selecting judges. To what extent do we want judges to have a closer connection, closer accountability to the electorate? And so I think the process that Lee describes, where the judiciary is nonpartisan, I think it does sound great, but I think even states where judges are appointed, politics is hard to avoid, right? And we see that at the federal level, where judges are appointed, but politics plays an ideology, play a big role in who gets on the bench. And I think one thing I'll mention as well is that, you know, we talk about judges as a group. You know, Lee did a nice job highlighting the different kinds of judges, but the day-to-day life of a probate judge or a district court judge is very different than the day-to-day life of a U.S. Supreme Court justice. Right. And so we can talk about judges as a group, but the work that Justice Alito is doing, Justice Thomas is doing in the Supreme Court is very different than the work of a trial judge at the state level. And ideology and politics might play a great role in one of those and a very small role in another one. So sometimes having a discussion in the abstract makes it a little bit difficult.
I'm curious. I mean, the contrast between what you just said, Dimitri, and what David said earlier about judges elected under Reconstruction and how there was a little, I mean, I take that to mean there was a little bit of a minority capture aspect to that. And I see David nodding. But Dimitri, you seem to be saying something different. So help me understand that, David. You go first.
Well, I'm not saying that judicial elections are in any way an inferior way to select judges. I agree with Professor Bam that it does allow the general public to be involved. Now, in larger states, the general public doesn't know a thing about judges either. It is really hard to get that messaging out. How do people message today? My team, your team. So they tend to, and their political consultants are the same. So they tend to message the same way you would for Congress. And so that's the downside. But on the other hand, it is true that regular people, and I know a lot of them here in Arkansas, where I am, and other states, that were not necessarily politicos, that weren't elites or weren't well-known, were able to, just with hard work and shirt sleeves rolled up, become a judge and represent an area of the community that may have not been on the bench. And that is good. It's very good. So I do not disagree. I just say from a point of view that that's how ours started in a lot of ways, was during Reconstruction, and it became ingrained in a lot of constitutions. So you can see on your map of judicial selection, kind of a little band in the South. You can see a Missouri plan, a band that goes across the Midwest, the same stuff that Professor Bam speaks on all the time. And it makes for this great compare and contrast conversations. So, yeah, I do think it's good for judges to be responsive, because currency of the judiciary is confidence. That's it. That's all they have, is that do people believe that we will do the right thing, not based on who gave me money, not based on which party I'm in, but based on the law, the fundamental law and the rule of law. So I always tell my judges, or when we're speaking about ethics, will what we want to do, whatever is proposed, increase the confidence of the public in the judiciary? If so, we're on the right track. If not, we got to reconsider.
Do you want to get back in, Dimitri, with another comment about that?
No, all I will say is, you know, Lee said earlier that no system is perfect. And that's true of all these methods, right? So when we look at any selection method, we can identify concerns about independence and impartiality and accountability. And we're always trying to balance kind of how do we want those factors to be calibrated against each other, and different systems strike them or calibrate them in different ways.
You know, you're talking about ruling according to the law, and I have no doubt that the Supreme Court right now is ruling according to their interpretation of the law. But obviously, there are plenty of people who believe the law should be interpreted a different way. So there is a crisis of confidence in some quarters about that. And it's not, you know, impartial justice. It's deeply and passionately conviction-based. It seems like, anyway. I see you smiling, Lee. Do you have a comment to make on that, or am I overstating it?
In my experience over the years, most people assumed judges acted on their own convictions and may not act on the law. But my personal experience is that judges act on the law as they believe it to be. So I think your initial statement was correct. You would get the same, this is how I read the law and this is why I come to this conclusion.
Yeah. Let's turn the page from extolling the virtues of Maine's judicial system and talk a little bit about the challenges. I'm going to do a quick station break and then we'll come back to that. You're tuned to the Democracy Forum on WERU. This is Ann Luther from the League of Women Voters of Maine. Our guests this afternoon are Lee Softly, President and Dean of the University of Maine School of Law, former Chief Justice of the Maine Supreme Judicial Court, David Sacker, Director of Judicial Ethics at the National Center for State Courts, and Dimitri Bam, Vice Dean and Provost Professor of Law at the University of Maine School of Law. This program was pre-recorded on June 17th. No listener calls are being taken this afternoon. So we've talked about, you know, how the Maine courts are structured, how people are appointed to the Maine courts, why we seem to have a pretty good impartial court and one that enjoys a lot of public confidence. What are the challenges? And we're hearing a lot of news reporting on the backlog in the courts and representation for indigent clients and reporting also on why the probate courts aren't integrated into the rest of the system and nominated the way the other judges are. Lee, you have had a firsthand view. Would you like to go first and say where you think the big challenges are?
I'm happy to give it a shot. Every system that deals with human dispute has many challenges. So I will focus on a couple, but I don't want to miss others. One of the biggest challenges in any court system right now is resources. Human resources. So I think the state of Maine right now is struggling with a backlog. That backlog is in part because there aren't enough attorneys. We're doing our best to make sure that there will be more attorneys. We're actually doing quite a bit to help attorneys get more information about criminal defense and criminal justice, which we hope will help. But clearly what you're hearing over and over is there are not enough attorneys. And at the same time, if you were looking at the juvenile justice system, you have judges who are presented with youth with real struggles, usually mental health struggles, and there are no resources for those youth. And sadly, they may end up at a place that we can only refer to as incarceratory, which exacerbates the problems they're dealing with. At the same time, there aren't enough judges. So if you had all the lawyers that you need and all the resources that you need for problem solving, you've still got to get into a court and get matters resolved and We're always at in a situation where there are not enough jurists, adjudicators to be able to handle the situation. I think you'll find that's true in many of the immigration courts these days, which are federal courts. And you'll find in some of the southern courts, just talking with my colleagues there, there were not enough judges to handle the cases quickly enough. Justice delayed is justice denied. I can't tell you how strongly I believe that that is true. If people have a problem that they can't get resolved, all kinds of other things in their lives, in their businesses, in their families go wrong. So it comes down to, do you have enough resources? Are you aiming them in the right direction? And if you don't, how do you, in a state that is not wealthy, figure out how to resolve that problem? There are a number of people looking at that, reducing the number of charges that get filed, diverting people from court programs. There are a number of things going on, but I should let my colleagues weigh in on this one as well.
Well, before I bring them in, I just want to clarify something. So some of this, it sounds like you're saying, is that the legislature has not appropriated enough money to the judicial branch. Is that true?
That is always a conversation between the judicial branch and the legislature, yes.
But part of it has nothing to do with the legislature. It's just we don't have enough dentists here. We don't have enough doctors here. We don't have enough lawyers here, type of thing. Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly right.
Okay. Dimitri, I wish you would comment. Or David, would you like to go first?
It's a big state, a very rural state. So I think some of the problems that Lee highlights are particularly severe in the rural parts of the state. So that's one factor to consider. I think the fact that many people can't afford a lawyer, have to proceed pro se in cases that, you know, maybe civil cases, but civil cases where there's a lot at stake, a lot of kind of individual rights, fundamental rights at stake. And I think that makes the legal system work not quite as well as it was designed. So I think the public perception trust problem is one that we're seeing nationwide. You know, as people lose confidence in the courts, I think you're seeing the kind of decline of the role of the courts. I think a lot of those problems we're not seeing as much in Maine, but you're seeing those nationwide as well.
Go ahead, David. I think that's your cue.
Yeah, and I think that's an excellent point, is that, you know, all these things affect how the public sees the judiciary, including things that the judiciary has no control over, like how many judges we have and how much money we have to put in there. And the judiciary makes up 2% of the budget in every state, or the federal judge, maybe. I mean, for a whole branch of government, we're a bargain. And yet it's sometimes hard to get the resources you need. 95% of every lawsuit filed in America is in a state court. So we talk about federal courts a lot, and that doesn't include traffic tickets. So mm-hmm. we're talking about actual civil criminal lawsuits. So probate lawsuits, these things are difficult. As Chief said, you know, a juvenile case could change a child's life into being a violent criminal later on because that's all they knew, or really change their life if you have the resources. So I think that drives confidence as well, noting that the judiciary still has the highest confidence of any branch of government. And we just did a state of the state courts address for the National Center. And when we brought in regulation to our focus groups, confidence in the judiciary went up.
Just like knowing what?
So we would tell people, like, how do you feel about the judiciary? And they would come back, and this is online at our National Center for State Courts. We've done these yearly. And they would say, like, how do you feel about the judiciary? Are you confident? And the main complaint would be there's two judicial systems, one for wealthy people and one for regular people. And then, you know, judges don't seem to be accountable to anybody. Well, a lot of people don't even know there's a judicial conduct commission like there is in Maine. And I promise you, the judges in Maine do not like having to answer judicial complaints. They try to not do the wrong thing, but they also don't want to have to answer those complaints. And that helps. And when we would add that information, people in Arlington and people in Chicago, they would be like, oh, well, I feel better knowing that there's a code of conduct and that it's enforced and that there is some regulation. I was asked to testify in front of Arkansas's legislature, and they kind of baited me with, only five judges were sanctioned last year in Arkansas. And then a favorable senator asked me the softball question, how many senators were sanctioned by the Senate? how many of the governor's appointees were sanctioned by the governor? it seems like the judiciary does a better job, but we're not really good at being forward facing. And so we do need more messaging towards, we are doing the right thing. We're trying to have, as I'm sure y'all know in Maine, you know, we do weighted docket load studies to try to make sure we get the right judges with the right amount of cases. And I think all those things are really good. They are challenges, but working together, I think you have the opportunity to overcome those challenges.
I mean, it's interesting because it feels like in this moment when everything is so hyperpartisan that one of the things that's undermining confidence in the federal judiciary is, you know, judge shopping and the partisan nature of, or the at least the perceived partisan nature of the appointments and the judges. And so I wonder the extent to which judges are feeling under threat or are in fact being threatened in other states has to do with that, and whether Maine has so far been insulated from those personal attacks against sitting judges. Does anybody know about that?
There have always been personal attacks against sitting judges. And very often, if there's a tragedy, a catastrophe of some sort, there will be, people will point at the judges. Judges are often threatened by people who will come before them. There was a period of time when my kids were younger when we had a trooper on the couch for a week or two because of some of those concerns. So that is always happening. I'm not sure it gets a lot of publicity. I think that's part of it, is it's part of an individual case most of the time. But it's a hard job to be a judge in circumstance where you have to make really difficult decisions all the time. And I think for the most part, judges hope that the public trusts them. I remember the first time I had to sentence someone to a fairly lengthy sentence, but his lawyer had convinced me that he should have Christmas with his family. So I sentenced him to 3 years in prison on an early December day and ordered him to show up at prison on the fourth day of January. And he did. And it is exactly as David says, the confidence in the judiciary is why it works. And we hope that the more we have these kinds of conversations and the more we keep an eye on how things are going, the better the confidence will be.
David, how does that, what Lee says, fit into what you're seeing in other states? Are other states in a more heated environment than Maine is, would you say?
Well, sure. And it changes. I was director of a judicial conduct commission for 17 years and president of the National Association. So I know everybody in every state. And every 5 to 10 years, one state has a crisis of something going on. So Maine is smart to be proactive about avoiding it. You can't sit on your laurels and be like, oh, we're fine. No. I was there to do a presentation at the Maine Supreme Court, or the Supreme Justice Court, justices, I gotta get that right. We're doing on professionalism. Why? Because they're already professional, but they really want to make sure they maintain that professionalism. And what can we do, and how can we increase that? So yes, Maine's been insulated in some ways and has made some good decisions in their mechanisms, but it's important that they look into things. I'm sure, and I know your Chief Justice, I'm sure she's looking at, should we do a weighted docket study? Should we, she's looking at all those things. She's taking on a professionalism program and maybe executive coaching and things that will help, because it doesn't matter that things are okay right now. You never know when the next big crisis is going to hit. And therefore, your judges need to be ready. And I think, again, I'm very positive that Maine's doing the right thing and working towards that. But it's also important that we're doing this and that the public is hearing more about, how do you pick them? Who are they? What do they do? We don't do enough of that. I think civics education has suffered a little bit, and I'm not trying to be the old, you know, old guy talking about that. But I do think that there are things that are just unknown, and they shouldn't be. And we should be able to talk about this stuff. So I think that that's very important. And I think it's been pointed out. Certainly, I think Chief Stoffel has pointed that out really well.
Dimitri, I want to give you a chance to answer the question about Maine comparatively. More heated, less heated, more confidence, more public confidence, less public confidence than in other states or at the federal level. And how fragile, assuming we're in a pretty good position here, how fragile are our protections?
Yeah, I mean, certainly less heated than many states. You know, I think David mentioned that every 5 years there's a scandal or controversy somewhere. I would say that somewhere is Wisconsin. I feel like, you know, there's some states where there's always an issue at the court. There's even been physical violence between justices and some of the state Supreme Courts. So we haven't had that here. And in many ways, I think Maine and maybe New England as a whole is somewhat unique and unique in our selection methods. You know, Lee mentioned life tenure, I think maybe retirement age in New Hampshire, but, you know, life tenure after that retirement age, that's unusual in the U.S. It's unusual around the world, right? Almost nobody has gone with these kinds of systems. So I do think it's unique. And I also agree with you, Anne, that it is a fragile system. I mean, I think as people watch what's happening, you know, David mentioned that 95% of the work is happening in state courts. But if you look at the coverage, we focus on the Supreme Court. We focus on federal cases. And so if that's all you think about, you think that's what all judges do, that might skew your view of the judiciary. So I do think it's important to talk about what state judges do, what trial judges do, and have people weigh in on what they think are kind of the benefits and the pros and the cons of different selection methodologies, retention methodologies, and the way that we do things here in Maine.
All right, now we're running out of time, and I think I've let us go a little too long already. So I'm going to ask you each 3 seconds to wrap it up. David, you go first.
Well, every case that's heard is a duel that's avoided. It's putting confidence that we as a nation will follow fundamental law, and the rule of law matters. So effective courts do that for us. And
Thank
citizens
you.
Should be involved. That's why programs are voting. That's why it's important.
Dimitri, a couple seconds worth.
No, I think, Anne, you know, the introduction, you mentioned that the whole goal here is to encourage citizens to engage in participatory democracy. And I think this forum is a great way to do it. Teach people about the courts, which I think often don't get as much attention as maybe some other branches.
The last word to you, Lee.
Well, thank you very much for having us. And through the miracles of modern technology, I can tell you that probate judges in Maine are required to be lawyers.
Aha. So, thank you for checking.
You
thank you.
You got it.
All right, that's our show for today. Thank you to our guests this afternoon, Lee Stoffel, President and Dean of the University of Maine School of Law, former Chief Justice of the Maine Supreme Judicial Court, also David Sacker, Director of Judicial Ethics at the National Center for State Courts, and Dimitri Bam, Vice Dean, Provost, Professor of Law at the University of Maine School of Law. You've been listening to the Democracy Forum, a project of the League of Women Voters Down East, produced in cooperation with WERU-FM, streaming at weru.org. If you have a comment about this show, please send it to news@weru.org. Put Democracy Forum in the subject line. The League's website is lwvme.org for more information about this topic or to learn about other shows in our series. You can subscribe to our podcast at lwvme.org. We'll see you here next month.